The Torah portion of Vayetzeh relates the engagement of Yaakov to Rachel, and the subsequent marriage night where Leah was substituted for Rachel, and he ended up marrying Leah, and thereafter marrying Rachel as well. The well-known question is raised, how was Yaakov allowed to marry two sisters? It is written explicitly in the Torah that a man may not marry two women that are sisters. How could Yaakov have done such a thing? And even though the patriarchs lived before the Torah was given on Mount Sinai, and therefore before this commandment prohibiting the marriage of sisters was ever given, nevertheless, our sages tell us that the patriarchs fulfilled all the laws of the Torah even before they were given, that with their prophetic vision they knew which laws would be given on Mount Sinai, and therefore kept all of these laws as well. Therefore, the question remains, how could Yaakov have married two sisters when the Torah prohibits it? We must bear in mind, however, that there are two distinct codes of behavior which the Creator has given the world. The first code is known as the Noahide Code, the so-called seven laws of Noah, because all inhabitants of the world stemmed from Noah. Therefore, these commandments are incumbent upon every single individual without exception. To list them briefly, these commandments include the prohibition against idolatry, murder, adultery, theft, blasphemy, cutting flesh from a living animal, and also the positive commandment to set up a legal system. In addition to these divinely ordained commandments, there were certain commandments which the inhabitants of the world commonly accepted upon themselves, and therefore became binding for all generations. These include honoring one's parents, prohibiting certain incestual relationships, and the law of being an honest person and keeping one's word. Immediately before the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai, and even more so at Mount Sinai itself, these laws were permanently codified, and in addition, a distinct set of laws, the Torah and its mitzvahs, were given to the Jewish people specifically. Today, after the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai, the Jewish people are bound by the code of the Torah, and the non-Jewish nations of the world are bound by the seven laws of Noah. The patriarchs were in a sort of intermediate position. On the one hand, they were before the Torah was given, and therefore were not totally bound by this code. On the other hand, they were not totally considered non-Jews because they were the preparation and, after all, the forefathers of the Jewish people. They therefore kept both codes, however, in a little bit of a different way for each of the codes respectively. Since they were children of Noah and the Torah had not yet been given, they had a full obligation to keep all of the Noahide commandments. Being the predecessors of the Jewish people, they also kept the laws of the Torah, but not as an obligation. They did it as something extra, an additional type of observance, going beyond what the law required of them. Which would take precedence should it be impossible to observe the demands of both codes? Let's say, for example, that the Noahide code would require that a certain act be done, whereas the Torah would forbid a certain act from being done. Which would take precedence? Obviously, they would have to do the certain deed, because since they were totally required to keep the Noahide code, and they were just doing something extra, beyond the law, so to speak, by keeping the Torah and mitzvahs, it would be impossible that the extra thing should outweigh the main thing. They were being more strict and doing something extra by keeping the laws of the Torah. That could not detract, however, from the main obligation from the Noahide code. And this is exactly the position that Yaakov found himself in. Yaakov had given a promise that he was going to marry Rachel. He had given his word. And therefore, under the Noahide code, he was prohibited from violating his promise. Since, as we mentioned, the Bnei Noach accepted upon themselves the mitzvah of honesty and keeping their word, Yaakov was also bound by this. And even though Laban had tricked him and substituted Leah for Rachel, this did not absolve him from his promise to marry Rachel. And this is even more important in view of the fact, as our sages tell us, that Rachel was worried that she was going to be married off to Esav. And Yaakov marrying her saved her from being given to Esav. Should Yaakov have reneged on his promise, this would have caused great pain to Rachel, since she would have been married to a wicked person. This, therefore, was Yaakov's dilemma. On the one hand, he was required to keep his word and marry Rachel. On the other hand, having already married Leah, he wanted to keep the requirement of the Torah and not marry two sisters. But over here it was impossible for him to keep this commandment, because the Torah itself required him to keep the laws of the Bnei Noach, to keep to the Noahide code, and keep his word, and marry Rachel, and marry two sisters. How then could he keep the extra observance of not marrying two sisters, where in this case he was required to marry the second sister and marry Rachel? And this is why he married two sisters, because in this case he was required to. From this, there are several practical lessons which can be learned. One is the obligation on every Jew to educate the non-Jews around him regarding the seven Noahide commandments, as Maimonides rules that this is a responsibility on every Jew to educate and encourage the non-Jewish nations to keep to this Noahide code. And there is another lesson inherent in this passage. We must always keep in perspective those things which are extra observances and are nice if they are done, and distinguish them from those things which are absolutely necessary. In increasing one's spiritual level or one's physical well-being, one must keep in mind, for you, is this something which is absolutely necessary, or is this something extra? Compare that with helping another person. Perhaps for this other person it is not only something which would be nice and something extra, that it is absolutely necessary for this person. If, therefore, this person is lacking basic physical needs, or basic spiritual needs, the most elementary knowledge of Judaism, for example, one must carefully examine the desire to increase one's own spiritual achievement and one's physical achievement at the expense of another, when you could be helping that other person and it's absolutely necessary for him, and absolutely required by the Torah that you should love your fellow Jew as yourself. One must carefully examine one's own personal desires and compare them with what is absolutely necessary for the other person's well-being.